It's time!
The Eagle rises again! 29-0.
That's it! He's got the shot!
Nate Diaz!
He's done it!
It is all over! Nate Diaz beats Conor McGregor!
What a night, ladies and gentlemen! What a night!
Rose Namajunas trying to close the show!
She was doing a great job of faith!
You're listening to Pound for Pound, ringside for all things MMA and boxing on WFUV Sports.
Kicking in the door with yet another installation of yours truly, WFUV's very own Pound for Pound. Ladies and gentlemen, we took some time off, but we are finally back to talk some cage here. A lot going on in the fight world, both in boxing and in mixed martial arts, UFC to be specific. We're going to get into the meat and potatoes, but before that, a little bit of an appetizer of introductions. It's been a while, guys. We have missed you. I am Mahdi Dembele, joined here by Zachariah Cordova, and making his debut for the first time on Pound for Pound, Jack Warner, ladies and gentlemen. WFUV's very own Jack Warner. He does a lot. Check out his socials there. But guys, how are we doing today after the long layoff? How are we feeling?
I'm doing good, man. Hey, Thanksgiving's next week right around the corner. I'm excited to go home. No, seriously, God bless. But after watching, we'll get into it later. I watched this week, and especially on Friday over on Netflix, I don't really want to get into it just yet. But hey, how are you doing, Jack?
I'm stoked to be here, boys. First of all, thank you guys for having me on. You know, one of the things, you know, bouncing around the various podcasts that we have here, one of the things that, first of all, I've never been on the show before, as Mahdi said, it's the debut for me.
Flowers.
You know, UFC and combat sports as a whole has been kind of a newfound love of mine over the last year or so. I've had multiple friends kind of getting me into it. And, you know, one of the things that I really have a ton of respect for about this podcast that really can't be said for a lot of the other ones here, they're all great in their own special ways. But the one thing about this one that I think is so special is, you know, a lot of our other podcasts cover the major sports in America, baseball, football, hockey, basketball, all that kind of stuff. And a lot of those, it's like, you know, you can read the front page of The Athletic and be able to, you know, you have to have some kind of baseline knowledge, but you can go in there and kind of, you know, you don't have to be an expert or anything to, you could be a real novice and go in and still have good conversation on these shows. This show is kind of kill or be killed. It's a very niche sport with a passionate following, and you guys, especially the expertise that you guys have, you know, talking about combat sports, you know, this is a special show you guys have. And Kraneri was great with you guys last year too. You know, I'm happy to be on his pod as well. He taught me a lot, and I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, Jack Warner, thank you so much for that. And we got Trey Rodriguez behind the board as well. Shout out to Trey. But again, it's something that we always say here on the podcast. I think fighting kind of captures and it's the most profound expression of the human spirit, right? Not everybody's an NBA player, NFL player, baseball player, but everyone in some semblance, one way or another, is a fighter. And we're going to talk some fighting here. Again, like we said, happy turkey to those joining in. Pretty soon we're going to be grubbing into some great eats, but I don't know. This last week of fighting kind of left a bad taste in my mouth, if I do say so myself. We're going to start here with the world of boxing. My dear sport, where have you gone? Mike Tyson, 58 years old, not so much the Dynamite Kid, but the Dynamite Grandfather, if you will, taking on one Jake Paul, 31 years, his junior. If I could just start this off, I love boxing. Like, I remember watching boxing on tapes. My father used to bring him home, 9, 10 years old. First fight I ever saw was Racer Ruddock versus Duke Morrison. First fight I ever saw. Got to meet Sean Porter. He was the second fight when he took on Broner. Right after that, Broner on the way down. But Sean Porter, like, Showtime Porter is always going to give you a fight. And then Rigondeaux and Donaire, and I just kept watching boxing because I absolutely do love this sport. And I do not know how I feel with Jake Paul. I used to watch Jake Paul on Bizard Bark on Disney XD taking on the legend. I hate to see my legends die here. And my biggest conniption is that's a card that had really good fighters on it. You had Abel Ramos. You had Shushu Carrington, New York City, Brooklyn's very own, who's going to be the next great boxer out of Brooklyn, The Ring Magazine. He's going to take on that Naoya Inoue, who's number 2 pound for pound ranked. You got Miss, her name escapes me, like Serrano.
Amanda Serrano. Katie Taylor's
on this card, and they're all playing. Mario Barrios was the first guy to wobble Tank Davis, Gervonta Tank Davis, and they're all playing second fiddle to Jake Paul. As a boxing purist, 21 years of age, I'm a boxing purist. Look at me, old soul. I do not appreciate that. But, boys, I don't know how you guys felt about it, if you liked it. I know you guys have some problems with Netflix, but the floor is yours.
Before we even get into the Mike Tyson-Jake Paul fight, that Katie Taylor-Amanda Serrano fight is... That's what boxing is.
100%.
At its essence. That's Absolutely. What it should be. That's what fighting is. That's what the sport has always been about. Two people giving it everything they have, willing to die in there, just doing whatever they could to win. And despite the result not being... As in a lot of opinions, some people throwing out the robbery word that's thrown out every time there's a decision.
I actually thought Katie Taylor won the fight, but I'm not mad at Serrano.
Right. But regardless of what the scorecard said at the end of the day, both of these women won. Women's boxing won this weekend because the main event that followed was really weak. We don't have to.
You could call it a slow dance. I don't know if I'd even call it a main event. It was they kind of just slow dance with each other.
A spar. You can even call it a spar.
I don't even know if that might even be generous.
It may even be generous. But Katie Taylor and Amanda Serrano came to blow the roof off that arena, and that right there, that was the main event to me. It was. I don't even know how to describe it. It was incredible to watch. What a fight from these two women and. Women's boxing is in good hands. There's a great future for women's boxing. It's here. It's here, and it's here to stay.
I thought it was a fantastic fight, and I do agree. I don't necessarily agree with Madi in that I thought Katie Taylor won the fight. But what I will say is that, like, I thought it was a good enough fight and an evenly balanced enough fight to where it's not blasphemy that they chose Katie Taylor. Now, what I will say is that I did take a bit of exception to the headbutting, whether it was intentional or not, which I would hope it's not intentional. And as good of a boxer as she is, I wouldn't think it's intentional. I don't think she needs that to be a good boxer. She's proven herself, way prior to this. But I thought just the fact that, that fight goes the distance and you see just all of the peaks and valleys, the ups and downs were like, you kind of sat on the edge of your seat there for a few minutes. Once they both, you could tell they were both very fatigued, wondering, hey, does the next person to land a good punch, win this fight? Could either, I was expecting a KO before the end of that fight. And it was more based off the exhaustion that I was seeing out of both of them. But it feels so wrong that was the fight that set the table for Paul and Tyson. I guess I'll just hop right into that. Here's the problem I have with the whole thing, and I don't have a problem with people being entertained by it. I love when the internet unites over big events and we all have fun stuff to talk about and giggle about. That's fine with me. And, Madi, we had this conversation, actually, after Paul Diaz on a one-on-one episode where I said to you, I don't have a problem with Jake making millions of dollars off of this stuff. I really don't care who he fights, honestly. The fact that he fought a 58-year-old Mike Tyson is pretty insane, but, they both got their bag and, power to them. The problem that I have is us not being able to draw this line between real boxers and entertainers, showmen.
Gimmick fights.
And I think there's a way in which this is good for boxing. It's not. I do think that the negatives right now are a little more present on my mind. But as far as it being good for boxing, this is getting people who don't watch boxing into watching boxing, and that's fine. That's good. I'm a diehard baseball fan. I wish there were ways to get people who are not into baseball into baseball. That'd be great. But the problem is, I don't like when Jake Paul is taken too seriously, and you look at all these names that he's fought up to this point. And they are all old enough to be his parents. And that, to me, is extremely bothersome. I'm not taking anything away from how he's whipped himself into shape and developed a really nice talent for himself. I think what he has done is impressive. Mm-hmm. But we cannot act like the second he steps in the ring with a real boxer, and I mean like Not that Mike Tyson's not a real, let me rephrase that, a of age, currently professional, getting paid as a boxer.
With a contender.
You cannot tell me that this dude is not going to get put on his ass.
Yeah, like, it's a mockery of the sport. You say, like, you don't care who he fights, and then he goes ahead and he fights a 58-year-old Mike Tyson. When he first started this journey into boxing, because I'm not, again, there's a low barrier of entry for boxing. It's not like the best 60 players in the NBA get drafted every year, or the best however many guys get drafted into the NFL. Anybody could become a boxer, so I'm not against that. Everybody is a fighter, like I have said before. He talked about fighting Canelo Alvarez. Canelo Alvarez is one of, like, this side of maybe Julio Cesar Chavez, maybe the greatest Mexican fighter. He's a natural counterpuncher. If you come towards him, he'll beat the hell out of you. Mm-hmm. He's of the lineage of, like, Gervonta Tank Davis, really Roberto Duran of little guys with big power. Duran moved up, fought Hagler at 116. Canelo's like that. He's not a 168er. Canelo's a very small, 5'7 at most, but big otherworldly power. Canelo is the one true pay-per-view, like, draw in boxing. It's not Tank, it is Canelo. Saul Canelo Alvarez from Guadalajara, Mexico. He is the number one star, and you talk about fighting him. Okay, let's see what you got. You got to fight a contender. Then you got to fight an amateur, maybe an Olympics guy, maybe an Olympics guy. You're like, it's a whole step. Like, it's a process, really. But if you're up for it, let's see what's really in your heart. And Nate Diaz, Tommy Fury's the one real boxer that you fought, but Tommy Fury's under 10 fights, and who's Tommy Fury in the boxing world? That's the number one guy that you have there. And then a 58-year-old Mike Tyson. Mike Tyson, it's almost like a guy who says he wants to box, and a coach tells him you got to be here every single day, and he's there maybe four times a day, week. Because you're like, okay, I'm going to fight Mike Tyson, but Mike Tyson's 60. Like, are you really serious about this? Like, you're wasting our time. Bruce Carrington is someone we should be Bruce Carrington out of Brooklyn, New York. We should be promoting, because he's an actual fighter, 13-0, made quick work. Mario Barrios cracked Tank Davis. Amanda Serrano's changing women's fighting with her damn fist. Katie Taylor as well. There's a line for this, and it's the purist in me. And I there is a point before I throw it to Zach. Boxing is all publicity is good publicity. Sometimes, like eyes are coming to the sport, but what kind of eyes, I think, is the general sentiment that I want to leave it there.
Well, Jack mentioned that people aren't taking him too serious. I think it's actually the opposite. I think we're not taking him serious enough. The guy's been boxing for a good amount of time.
He can fight.
He has the money to get great trainers. He's been doing it for a long time. He's gotten good enough to where he's a legitimate boxer. I don't think we can let him continue to get away with calling out old retired fighters and using their names to go out there and either knock them out or embarrass them, or we end up like an event like this weekend where it's a light spar for 8 rounds and you fill up the Cowboy Stadium and have all of Netflix shutting down over it, and the main event's not even worthy of being on the main card. That's how good of a fight, or how bad of a fight that was. And to me, I feel like it's time for Jake Paul to start fighting guys who are real fighters. Yes, we can all say every fighter, at least boxers, tend to have records where their first 20 wins are against cans, if you want to say that, or against people who are not nearly as good. Matchmakers are doing an incredible job at what they do, especially Jake Paul's matchmakers. But at the same time, there's got to be a certain point where you got to say, okay, this guy is a legit fighter. He's a real boxer. He trains at it the way he goes about it. He's a real boxer. It's time for him to start fighting people who are actual contenders, who are actually in the sport at his age, and who are actually going to give him real tests. I get you have to sell a pay-per-view. You got to put a name at the top of the bill. It's not going to sell if you have some randoms on there. But it's Jake Paul. You have the name on Jake Paul. Maybe he doesn't have to be the main event. Maybe you can take an undercard spot just so he can start fighting people who are actually relevant in the sport, people who are actually contenders, people who are actually going to give him a real test and not sit there and just be old for 8 rounds.
But am I being too harsh if I say that I really don't feel comfortable calling him an air quotes real boxer until he makes that step?
No,
like,
it's
like
true.
You said like he's a real boxer. And I get what you're saying, but like the way I would look at it more is like he's a, maybe he's a, you know where he is to me right now? He is
a content creator.
He is Happy Gilmore.
Yep.
If you've seen the movie Happy Gilmore,
okay,
yep.
I like
he is,
that.
If you watch the movie Happy Gilmore, he's like Happy Gilmore at the driving range
yeah.
once he realizes he can hit a long ball. He hasn't made
Very
the pro cool. tour yet. He hasn't done any of that stuff yet. Mm-hmm. He's like, if you want to call him a, you know, we can come up with some freakish title for him. If you want to call him an elite amateur boxer, go ahead. I'm fine with that. But mm-hmm. to me, it's like I struggle with that, like, any sort of legitimacy to his title of a real boxer or a good boxer or, God forbid, a great boxer until he makes those steps. I'm at least happy that for the last couple years he's been fighting, at least he's been boxing fighters. Because think about this. How did this man go viral as a boxer? By knocking out a basketball player.
Yeah, Nate Robinson.
He knocked out a goddamn basketball yeah. player. This is, and that's part of why I'm frustrated about this is he has the money and the resources and the fame that if he wanted to take that next step, he would.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think he does.
Here's
I
the
really
thing,
don't.
Because here's the thing, because this is the underlying question that you're getting at, Jack. Does he really love boxing? Does mm-hmm. he really, really love this sport?
I think he loves the adrenaline. I think he loves what he's doing right now.
I think the adrenaline is something, because you talk to boxers, they say the best thing that they ever heard in life is the crowd just screaming their name. Ask Canelo Alvarez. That's why he's a huge narcissist, because that feeling, that rush that you get from the adoration and the love from
just
the crowd,
just being in the fire in itself. You've experienced. I've experienced.
Yeah,
it's
a drug.
It's unlike anything that you can describe. It's not a feeling that, especially in such a big arena,
yeah.
And the Cowboy Stadium is, I don't even know how many people that holds. There's not a feeling like it.
Yeah.
But at the same time, we're letting him get away with it in terms of, we're paying for it, we're buying it, people are showing up for the events.
But you know who else? You know who else I think is letting him get away with it?
Ooh.
The fighters themselves.
Yeah, no, definitely.
Because the other one I think back to, because again, I found, as many others did, this fight on Friday to be generally uneventful. The other thing I thought back to immediately was Paul Diaz.
Mm-hmm.
Because what was one of the main claims to fame for Nate Diaz throughout his entire career? That man has a chin of steel,
yep.
that he can take crazy hits and just look at you and be like, that's all you got?
Yep.
Like, he was known as, or still is known as, one of the greatest, like, hit absorbers ever. Yep. All he did when he fought Jake Paul, or like I said, tangoed or slow danced with Jake Paul, was just took shots from him and looked at him. It didn't even feel like Jake Paul. That's the other thing. Like, yes, by the scorer's decision and by, you know, these kind of things, he won the fight. Some of these fights don't even feel like Jake Paul won the fight. Like, yes, he landed more shots. He may have had better stamina. The other people might have been more tired at the end because they're 70 years old. But the thing is, like, some of these fights have literally just been, like, I feel like a clear cash grab. And it's fine. Nate Diaz has nothing left to prove. Mike Tyson definitely has nothing left to prove. They've given us, they've done their service for us as sports fans. They've done what they've needed to do. So I don't, but at the same time, it's like, I feel like there's also an illegitimacy on these fighters' part. And I'm not questioning their pride or their dignity, but it's just like, this is now two fights in a row where I feel like you had very, like, respected fighters in their respective fields that really just kind of went out there and took shots and were fine.
Mike Tyson, Customato's last fighter, Floyd Patterson, the answer to Liston, Mike Tyson. 20 years old, he became world champion, Mike Tyson.
We were 2 years old for his last professional fight.
Yeah, his last professional fight on the way down, Mike Tyson, it was not a happy story.
Mm.
And again, this is the purist in me. This is the guy who, like, this, like, his life story is incredible. Mike Tyson, like, Jackson, Jordan, Tyson, top three, I think, is the Jay-Z lyric. Like, Mike Tyson reached, he was a gladiator. And to see him just fall from grace, I think, is the reason it hurts more for me. But to Jake Paul, just to end this segment, I think the general sentiment going around is question mark. What are you? Are you a boxer or a content creator? And you're doing this in a sport particularly that can't afford to take another hit, because the culture around boxing now, Twitter fingers, Shakur Stevenson, Devin Haney, everybody has the Twitter fingers. No one wants to get into the ring and fight.
Mm.
And Jake Paul seems to be not the, I want to say, focal point, because again, is he really a boxer? But he seems to be yet another example of that in the sport of boxing. It is dying, and it is dying fast.
Mm.
Hopefully it wakes up.
And one thing too, and I think that this is going forward, because you mentioned about it's also on the fighters. It's the same situation in the UFC right now, where everybody, no matter what weight class they're in, is calling out Conor McGregor. He's the cash cow. Conor's been away. He's done his thing in the MMA, though.
Yeah.
At the same time, Jake hasn't. But what I'm saying is, people, need to take notice, and others aside from retired old fighters, real fighters, I should rephrase, current boxers need...
Contenders.
Contenders. Just anyone in the sport who is trying to get their name out there, who already even has a little bit of a name of a platform, take notice. Maybe not say, hey, this is a YouTuber now. Say, hey, this guy can make me some money, and he seems like he can fight a little bit. Let me call him out. We need actual fighters to call him out now and get in the ring with him, because they can either put their name out there, because you mentioned you have some smaller name guys who are very, very much
stars
on their way up,
coming up. Stars.
And they don't have the recognition yet. Those are the people I want to see start calling out Jake Paul, and not only just call out Jake Paul, demand that fight. Demand Jake to give Jake a test. Say, hey, if you're really about this, come fight me.
Hear me out. Let's delay all that. That all sounds great. Let's delay that one more time for another BS fight. Jake Paul versus Michael B. Jordan.
They say Michael B. Jordan could fight too. I mean, the Creed trilogy.
They said he got knocked out for real to get like to make the movies more realistic. That like he took knockout shots for real. That wasn't a stunt double.
They said he could fight. I don't know if Michael B. Jordan would be willing to do that. Not that he's scared, but I don't know if, like, I just can't see it. Yeah. Like, it'd be like, nah, what is this?
Oh,
like,
one last thing before we wrap it up. Netflix, go to hell. You ruined it.
Do we want to touch on that?
The amount of money that you charge and continually increase prices make it harder and harder for people to use your platform, because you're so, like, I get any big companies about money, but you guys are so stingy that you're making logins harder. You're making family sharing harder.
Quickly, just to interrupt you, they don't even give you the full like seasons of show. Like it'll be a show and it'll be like two seasons.
Yeah.
When it's like a show that's been running for like 9 or 10.
Right. And that's the other thing I was gonna say is I felt like when we were all fascinated with Netflix early on. It pains me that my parents still pay for Netflix. So I'm fully Hulu you know, any other. I'll pay for, you know, Prime Video. Or any of that kind of stuff.
Peacock.
You name it. Any of those. Tubi. Any of those. I don't care. But no, it was like, dude, all the money that you charge for Netflix, and you make it harder and harder for your customers to like stream and use it, and you make it less compatible as time goes on. You can't keep any of the good movies that are on your platform around, or shows for that matter. And then the one time that you get like a cool like live event, you sell the clip. Like it's just so... Yeah. Oh my God.
Well, this is one of the crazy things. He had 6.6 million people watching the fight on Antonio Brown's live stream on Twitter of him recording the Jumbotron. That's how bad Netflix's services were, that half of the country couldn't even watch the fight. And maybe that's a good thing. It wasn't a good fight.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, you had 6.6 million people tuning into CTESPN to watch Jake Paul versus Mike Tyson. That's sad. And one thing that I'm thinking about now going forward is the UFC's deal with ESPN is up in 2025.
God.
They're looking for a new suitor that could not be ESPN. And
resign. Just
Netflix
resign.
Is apparently in that running. And that's the last thing. After this weekend... And what happened with the whole site going down, and some people were able to watch it, but it was super blurry or it was buffering the whole time. If we're stuck with that for UFC events, oh man.
Is boxing still on HBO?
Boxing's on, it's all over the place.
It's all over the place. DAZN. Showtime has really bad. Oh my God, the camera will be like panned away from Showtime is bad. I mean, like Dana, please, Dana's been making a lot of questionable decisions.
Yes.
Don't make Netflix your next one.
Don't make this mistake.
Please, let's move away from that.
Stay with what works. ESPN. And make it a little bit cheaper. Just a little bit. Or make a subscription service. But I don't want to get into the whole tangent, but make a subscription service something for people who watch all the fights. So
no, a lot of pro leagues do that, and it ends up being a phenomenal deal. I'm a diehard Major League Baseball fan, and you can pay for two packages. You can either pay for the one for just your specific team or for the whole league.
Yeah.
I'd save a lot more money doing it for my team. If I could pay for just the Red Sox games, I would do that. But no, I pay for the whole league. It's like $144 for the year, which sounds like a lot until you realize how much baseball I end up watching.
Exactly.
Nighttime, I'm watching a West Coast game because I need something on the TV. I'm watching like a San Francisco Giants game at 11 o'clock at night. Like UFC could do the same thing.
Yeah, take a lesson from, like, we're talking badly about Jake right now, but take a lesson from, look how many people watched the fight this weekend because it wasn't a pay-per-view. It wasn't, you can't get casuals into a sport when it costs $80 to buy a pay-per-view.
You have to invite them to the table. You can't
$80,
charge them.
And we're talking like twice a month. That's $160 a month to watch two cards that every now and then don't deliver.
And by the way, we're talking smack about him. Any smack that we talk about him won't hide the fact Jake Paul, in his own right, is a brilliant man.
He is.
Marketing genius.
Absolute marketing genius. Yeah. Internet genius.
Like a rage bait type of, well, like, he knows how to bring eyes to the sport.
Why are we tuning in? We want to see Jake get knocked out, right? Yeah. He's getting people to not like him. I can't tell you there was one person in that entire stadium that was saying, hey, I want Jake to win. He's getting people to give him money for not liking him because they want to see him get knocked out, and they say, hey, I want to see you get knocked out. I'm going to give you money, and then he goes out there and fights a 58-year-old man who's not going to knock him out. The threat was talked about because of who Mike Tyson was, but Mike Tyson's 58. He's brilliant. He's brilliant in what he does. Jake Paul knows what he's doing, and he knows how to make money. Dana should take a page out of his book and say, hey, let's not charge $80 for a pay-per-view.
All eyes are on the face of Jake Paul in the boxing world. We're going to move now away from that boxing card into the world of mixed martial arts, UFC. We've talked about it briefly in the last segment. Dana White having to take a book out of Jake Paul's, having to take a page out of Jake Paul's book, something I never thought I heard. But UFC 309, Madison Square Garden fight for New York, and it was something special. Just the top two fights. We could start off with Michael Chandler and Charles DuBronx Oliveira. Ladies and gentlemen, I got to tell you, I'm a little tired now of Michael Chandler. Like, we talk about this, we say this ad nauseum about him. He is the one true guy in that division. When you talk about bones, it's more of a basketball term, but a guy's natural skill set and ability, he is the one guy that you look at and goes, he could maybe dethrone Islam Makhachev in that division. But for some reason, I don't know if it's – I think it's past just fight IQ. Mm-hmm. I don't know if he wants it anymore. I truly, genuinely believe that. Because when you do – let's take the Charles Oliveira, like that like back jump, if you will, is what I'll call it. You had to do it in the first fight, like you said, Zach. But the second time around, he says F it, and then he just does it. It's like, what are you – what really are you here for? Like, I always believe that the ultimate goal is to win. Mm. And if you have the opportunity to win and you squander it, that's past fight IQ. You ain't a fool. You a new fool.
Here's my take on the whole Michael Chandler situation, because I feel like this lightweight division has some of these characters where they stick around. They're not necessarily fighting for the belt all the time.
We talked about Kevin Holland.
But it's people who come in there and just like to put on a show. And that's one thing that I can never speak badly about Michael Chandler about, because when have we watched a boring Michael Chandler fight? The control time from Charles Oliveira was maybe a little bit boring, just the back sitting this weekend. But at the same time, when they were on the feet, everything else that happened, you can't say that Michael Chandler has a boring fight. And I think at this point in his career, in his life, the guy's just an entertainer. He wants to go out there and blow the roof off an arena. It's kind of what Justin Gaethje is. Justin Gaethje has gotten a little bit more serious, but his style, what used before he kind of calmed it down a little bit, was just chaos. I'm just going to go in there, I'm going to throw down with you, and we're going to swing, and it's going to be a banger, and everybody's going to love it, but at the same time, I might not win because I might get knocked out. That's what Michael Chandler is at his essence, is an entertainer. And that's why I don't hate the Conor McGregor fight for him, because at the end of the day, we're going to get an exciting fight. Whether it's Michael Chandler being over the top afterwards on the mic, or just being over the top trying to get the fight to begin with, yes, it gets annoying. But can we really say that we have seen a boring Michael Chandler fight?
I cannot say that.
No.
God on his truth, to God, right hand to God, I cannot say that.
It's fight of the year almost every time
he fights.
And
the other thing that impressed the hell out of me was some of the, like, just the raw strength he showed in that fight.
Very strong.
Couple of the rear chokes that Oliveira had on him, where he was able to get up with Oliveira on his back and get off the ground.
I mean, he's like, think back to the Kevin Holland, like, it's like the Kevin Holland conversation that we had. When you're an artist, if you will, because I think if you're an athlete, you're an artist in some way. That's artistry that you're putting on. It's not something that everybody could do. It's not something that everybody could comprehend or really get into. Art's a niche, and you are a master of this niche. I think at some point, it's like, you owe us that the highest level of that art. Like, don't you want something more? I understand that you're an entertainer, but with all the bones, the God-giving ability that you have, like, does that not get old, that box that you put yourself in? Which is ironic, because artists don't put themselves within boxes. Yeah. But you see some artists, like a Michael Chandler, like a Kevin Holland, put themselves in a box. Like, doesn't your creative mind want more, if you will?
The way I look at it is, their art is their style, and Michael Chandler's style is chaos and violence. And every time he comes into the octagon, we get that. there's no question of what Michael Chandler brings to a pay-per-view card. Every time you see his name on a card, you're saying, I'm there for that fight. Yeah. I will be there for fight no matter what, because it's always a banger every time Michael Chandler steps in the octagon. And aside from this weekend, you look at the fight with Justin Gaethje at MSG. He literally blew the roof off the arena. Same thing, I think, a year later, him versus Dustin Poirier. Same building at MSG. Everybody the entire time is talking about that fight on the card. Those two together. There's not even a question. Okay, we don't even have to get into analytics of who's going to win. We're just going to see violence. And this week, and someone's going to come out and someone's getting finished. Someone's going to get knocked out. That's what you talk about when you get a Michael Chandler fight. And I think his legacy is more at this point. He says on the mic, I'm the most entertaining guy in the UFC. I don't think he's wrong to think that. He's definitely up there in terms of the most entertaining fighters on the entire roster. And I've always thought this in terms of MMA, because I feel like not everybody can be a champion. There's one champion at a time per weight class. There's some guys that are just not meant to be beaten, like Islam Makhachev right now at the moment feels like he's invincible. There's some guys who create a legacy and a living for themselves off of being a fan favorite, being the guy that, hey, I'm going to go in there, I'm going to fight for you guys, I'm going to throw down, and we're going to have a banger fight, potential fight of the year every time I'm in there. And there's a certain respect I give to Chandler for doing that each time, because, I mean, we were talking about it before we even started the podcast, some of the injuries that he talked about he sustained in this fight.
Peeing blood.
Just peeing blood after the fight. Oof. That's what Michael Chandler's willing to go out there and do to put on a show for the crowd. Whether he's winning or not in spectacular fashion, you're getting a war out of Michael Chandler every time he's on the card.
Absolutely. And I think the one perfect example throughout UFC history of this is Donald Cowboy Cerrone, right? Like, most bonuses at one point. Like, the guy was just chaos personified. I remember he had a IG, like, altercation with somebody. He posted his entire address on IG. He said, come through if you have a problem. He is a cowboy. Yes, he is. And every time he fought, he was never champion, right? Mm. I don't think he was ever champion. It escapes me. But it was never for a lack of, I don't want to say trying, but having his eye on that. I'm sure that Cowboy Cerrone went into every fight and going, yeah, I'm going to take this guy's head off. This is eventually going to be fighting for more. I don't get this from Michael Chandler. I think he just wants to go in there. Yeah, I'm going to put on a banger, and then that's it. Like,
I think that's totally fair. I think that that's the reason why the BMF belt was created in the first place. We don't look at that as a legitimate championship belt. We're not walking saying, oh, because we saw it with Max Holloway. He holds the BMF belt right now. He just lost. He's still the BMF champion. It's a belt made, and it's not even just about fighting for the BMF belt. That's why it was made. Those guys like Michael Chandler, guys who aren't going to necessarily fight for the actual belt, but they still deserve some sort of recognition for being who they are, fighting the way they do, giving the fans what they want every time they step in the octagon. And you talk about performance bonuses, just to switch it over from Chandler to Oliveira.
Yeah.
Oliveira got his 20th performance bonus this weekend. He's, I think, all-time leader in that in the UFC. And
yes, he is.
This past weekend, I think, was one of the better versions we have seen of Charles Oliveira in a very long time. He looked very sharp. The grappling looked incredible, to the point where I almost feel like, you know, Charles is ready to make this championship run again. And he made a legitimate case for himself this weekend to get a shot at Islam. And I think he definitely made that known to Islam.
Former UFC lightweight champion Charles Oliveira picking up yet another win against Michael Chandler. He also looked good. I don't want to say he didn't look that bad in the Saryukin fight either. So he's building off of that momentum. It's not a one-fight like thing. It's a two-fight thing. Mm. And he looks good. His life story is something too. Heart palpitations. They said he couldn't ever be an athlete, I believe the story is. But now look at him. He's sitting atop, and he's one of the top dogs in that loaded lightweight division. Charles Oliveira picking up the win, doing what he does best. And Johnny Bones Jones leaving bones in his tracks. Stipe Miocic is somewhere in a hospital with multiple injuries after that very fluid, I would say, back spinning kick, whatever you want to describe it as. I mean, John Jones at this point, with everything, he's the greatest mixed martial artist of all time. This iteration might not be. I think Tom Aspinall gets him out of there. Pereira is going to be a bit interesting. I think he could pull maybe an Ankalaev impression and just take him down. But present standing, John Jones is the greatest mixed martial artist.
And before we get into the whole Aspinall talk, you got to give John his respect.
His flowers.
Because, yeah.
Did you see the Twitter? His new Twitter picture? It was a duck.
I did.
Yeah, I've been loving the games he's been playing online.
I've seen it all, and I don't want to get into it just yet because I want to talk about this fight first, because the whole John Jones Tom Aspinall situation has bothered me a little bit. But this weekend in particular, he looks like he was leagues above Stipe. That didn't shock me. Stipe hasn't fought in 4 years.
You wanted
the last time we saw him in the octagon. I did want the Stipe knockout. The last time we saw Stipe in the octagon, though, he was getting brutally knocked out by Francis Ngannou. And this is a guy where he and all respect to Stipe, he volunteers as a fighter, works full-time at doing that. There was a long time he was just not training. He was basically retired after that Francis knockout, was just working as a firefighter. Even during this training camp, he was still working as a firefighter while training. He would train and then go work. And to me, it just felt like Stipe was there because Jones called him out, and it was one last good payday to end his UFC career, a good way to go out at MSG. But Stipe just, he wasn't the same guy this weekend. This wasn't the high-level matchup that we thought we were going to get. And it went the way I thought it was going to. John Jones dominated him, looked way better than him. But I do think that it's interesting to me how long it went, because we were 30 seconds away from getting a round four. And for where John Jones is at in his career and where Stipe's at in his career, I feel like that, and yes, he finished him at the end of the day, I feel like it shouldn't have taken that long. I feel like Stipe shouldn't have had a moment. And I think round two was arguably, I think even on one of the judges' scorecards, they gave round two to Stipe. And I feel like if you're John Jones and you're being the self, not even self-proclaimed, everyone kind of says he's the GOAT, but putting yourself on that Mount Rushmore, Dana giving you, putting you at the top, you've got to give a better performance. You got to get this guy out quicker than that, and it shouldn't take you four rounds to beat another senior citizen after we watched Mike Tyson fight the night prior.
Yeah, I mean, the other thing that I thought was weird was, even though I don't look at this as like a evenly matched fight whatsoever, like you mentioned, it looked like Stipe had been out of it for a while. And I did, just going back a little bit, I did love his honesty during the interview in the ring, where they're like, "So is this it for you?" And he lets out like a big sigh, goes, "Oh, I'm done."
Thank
God, this is it. I loved the honesty. But no, the one thing that I thought was kind of interesting was, like, I go back to what I was saying, is, you know, I don't think, nor does anyone else really think, that this was like an even showing. But I thought in that second round, after Stipe landed a couple uppercuts, there was still some stuff left on the table from him. And you even noticed during the fight, I don't know if it was during the break going into round three, or whether it was caught on the mics during round two, it felt like Stipe's corner was really like pulling for him to go more on the attack, and he just wouldn't do it. I think that was obviously the round he was the most competitive in, but then in round three, I think you kind of got the idea that Jones was going to kind of just handle it from a distance. It was more going to use his reach, use his kicks, and that's ultimately how the fight ended. But it was just weird how in the second round, it just felt like Stipe kind of left a little... It felt like he left something on the table. It felt like his pacing was good. He landed a couple good shots. It felt like it was... I was wondering if the fight was going to kind of even out after that round, and I don't know. I don't know if it was him purposely just like kind of trying to get his money, like you were saying, not accusing him of that, but I don't know if it was just him not really feeling the need to put in that extra oomph into that round and go after him and try to risk it all. Because again, it is John Jones standing across from you, but it was just weird. I feel like there was more to be desired in that round.
I think he lost the eye just a little bit. Like, he let out that sigh of relief knowing, yeah, I'm done. Like, the attack, like, I'm sure like a younger Stipe Miocic, like, what, 2013, he fought Junior Dos Santos, he'll probably, like, if that was him in the cage, he'll probably go after it.
Right.
But at a certain point, you just lose it again. Like everybody falls from grace, right? Yep. We just saw it with Mike Tyson. With Stipe, it's just a slow, perpetual fall from grace, basically retired. They want him to go on the front foot. And in that split second, he looked into himself. He said, "Do I have it?" And it was like, no. At 42 years of age, I no longer have it. After how many title fights in a row? How many? It's like six title defenses, right? And how many title fights he's been in? He's been in, like, I have it right here. He's been in one, two, three.
I know. Four. I know he has four defenses at least.
Four defenses, but one, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight, nine straight title fights where the belt is up for grabs. Does he have it anymore? He looked inside himself. He says, "No, I'm done. Farewell, I bid adieu."
And that's why I think it's fair to look at this fight critically a little bit of Jones. Like, yes, he got him out of there at the end of the day, but
John's also an old man too.
John is older too, but at the same time, he is the champion. He is the heavyweight champion, and Dana's still putting him in there. This is the number one pound for pound fighter in the world. Anytime he's in the octagon or alive, he's still the number one pound for pound fighter in the world.
Dana likes money.
I don't want to rush us into the Aspinall talk because I know you wanted to get there when we're ready for it. But this just kind of relates is that I also felt like it was a bit underwhelming from Jones, especially because when you heard his talk in the pre-fight pressers, he was saying when he was getting peppered with questions about Aspinall, which I do respect that he kept his cool pretty well during all that. I feel like I would have gotten really irritated if I'm going into a fight for another defending the belt, and I am just peppered with questions about somebody I'm not
just
fighting.
Just to interrupt you real quick, to be real, that's the fight that should have happened.
It's
because Aspinall is the literal interim champion.
No, I agree.
Defended it before he did, so that's why people are like, "Yo, why are you fighting Aspinall? You're fighting this old man."
Right? No, I completely agree. What I was gonna say though is that I was also a little. You're talking about he's John Jones. Like this felt like a bit of a. It felt like a bit of an underperformance from him at times in this fight. The other reason I think it felt like it was just a little flatter than I would have liked it to be is just because in those pre-fight pressers, he's talking about one of the things he kind of threw in there was basically saying that Tom Aspinall wasn't worth his time.
Yeah, he said he didn't deserve it.
Yeah, and so when you're throwing out things like that against one of the most, if not the most electrifying fighter in the sport right now, I really would have liked to have seen a more dominant fight here. And also, even some of the other people that he's considering fighting, or we don't know if he's trolling or not.
Perea.
But Perea, I don't even know if this effort would have guaranteed him a victory against Perea.
Yeah. Just the wrestling. I think
the wrestling. That's why I brought up Ankalaev. He could probably take him to the ground. You're not taking Tom Aspinall to the ground. And Aspinall moves like a lightweight. He's too fast for you.
Yeah. Right.
So that's why he went with Pereira.
And I think John did have a statement. He had a chance to make a statement in that first round when he started dropping those elbows on Stipe at the end of the round. And yes, he doesn't get him out of there. That's Stipe being tough. This is just him being who he is. You go into that second round, John's got to finish it. You can't let Stipe go out there and win a round against him.
Right.
If you're going to really prove a point that say, hey, this guy's not worth my time, he's got to go out there and finish Stipe. Stipe goes out in the second round after nearly getting finished at the end of the first and has himself a good round and arguably beats John in that round. And that's, to me, is John Jones has to he had a chance to make his statement after all of the talk. He had a chance to back it up and say, you know what? This guy isn't worth my time. I'm going to go out there and finish this Stipe brutally. I'm going to show the rest of the world that I deserve to choose what I want to do. Well, he goes out there, nearly finishes in the first, and lets Stipe have a round.
Who we should really be looking at? Who these criticisms are really for? Uncle Fester. This is all for Dana White. Because Dana White loves his stars. Like, I'm pretty sure he would still holler for Conor McGregor or Brock Lesnar or Ronda Rousey. And, of course, Jon Jones. But the division has to move on. You have to find new stars. And you do. You have a Sugar Sean O'Malley. You have Ilya Topuria. You have Tom Aspinall. Mm-hmm. You have Alex Pereira in his prime. So you have the next class of great MMA stars. Let the old one go.
Well, he's a promoter at the end of the day.
I understand that.
White is a promoter, and that's I'm agreeing with you because I'm saying he is missing so badly
the point
on an opportunity to promote the future
out
of
with the old
sport.
In with the new. John Jones is old business, the greatest of all time. GSP, Demetrius Johnson, John Jones, those are my three. I think John's the one, but out with the old. Make Tom Aspinall your star because he is a star. Doesn't last. You're not going into a second round with Tom Aspinall because he's knocking you out, and mortgage with that. Yep. Play around with that instead of holding on to something that, to my senses, doesn't even like really care anymore. Yep. Like it just feels like he's holding the belt just so he can hold the belt and feel the gold. But you have Tom Aspinall, make him your guy.
And that's what's bothered me is it's not just Aspinall that he's missing on. He's discrediting a lot of fighters on the roster for the sake of saying Jones is number one pound for pound. He's over here saying, oh, why is he not pound for pound over Islam? Islam has looked unbeatable in his entire title reign.
Yeah.
No one's been able to touch the guy. And we're talking about John Jones who took nearly four rounds to get a 42, 43-year-old Stipe who hasn't fought in 4 years out of the octagon. And Dana's posting on his story yesterday, like, these are guys are idiots for not putting John Jones over Islam.
It's because these guys made him, like, UFC hemorrhaging money when he first bought it in 2001 when he became the president. Mm. Like, these guys saved his promotion. So I understand the emotional heartstrings, mm-hmm. like, hemorrhaging. Like, that's why do you think he loved Chuck Liddell? Mm-hmm. Chuck Liddell saved the business. Forrest Griffin saved the business. Stephen Bonner, God rest his soul, saved the business. John Jones, Ronda Rousey, Conor McGregor, they brought it into that. So I understand that these are the guys that you came up with. You were the owner, they were the fighters, and you made the UFC what it was. But eventually, you got to let go.
And John's not going to be around for much longer. Yeah, he's even to even, and Pereira's older too. Dana, after the fight, I get he's saying, like, he says, oh, I'm definitely not making that fight. But discrediting Alex Pereira immediately, I can't put him in there with Jones. Jones is going to take him down, and it's going to be just going to dominate him. It's like, this is your current light heavyweight champion. You can't be like, yeah. Oh, yeah, he's just going to get mauled by the other side. You can't do that. And this is a guy who's currently arguably the face of your company.
And that's the other thing I don't like is when we're talking about the John Jones, like, GOAT debate, which I don't really think it's a debate. I do think right now he's the GOAT, and mm-hmm. that's fine. But what bothers me a lot is this feeling as though, like, he's being protected, where, like, goats are not to be protected. In fact, in many sports, the goats were hated.
Yeah.
You look at – do you think that there's been in this, you know, call it last 10, 15 years, do you think there's been a more hated quarterback than Tom Brady?
Hell no.
No. Absolutely not.
Mahomes.
not yet.
Not yet. It's going to get to that point.
It'll get there.
No, I agree with you.
But, like, I don't like the protection. I get there was Jordan rules in basketball.
Michael Jordan
kind of
was a whole super villain.
I was going to say, all people did was just hope that Michael Jordan would lose. People knew that once they played the Chicago – Bobby, our station had Bobby. He talks about it all the time that when he was a Knicks fan – what he said was that you were in New York watching basketball, and he said you were preparing yourself for when Jordan would ultimately break your heart. Those are the kind of goats in sports where, like, they don't need protection.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I don't know, again, we'll never know because we're not behind the scenes. I don't know how much of a say John Jones has in this. It could be Dana White really kind of sabotaging this whole thing. You don't know. Like, I don't know who's pulling the strings here, but I just think it's annoying that, like, he's already proven, like, a lot of us are, we're criticizing the hell out of him right now, and we all agree that he's the GOAT or one of the top two or three, like, whatever. Mm. Whatever you say, we have him in high praise no matter what. But it's just, it's frustrating when it some of this feels so manufactured. It feels like it's these routes that he's taking to fights are so man-made. It's he's not going to fight him because, you know, this is just not a good matchup at all. And, he's not going to fight him because, you know, we're just not even going to negotiate that. Or he's not going to fight him because he didn't earn it. All these sorts of things. It's like, it just feels so manufactured and fake at this point. I'm glad it's happening now at this stage in the career when he's 38 and not when he's way younger, because he's proven enough to this point where we can still confidently say, like, yo, he's one of, if not the GOAT. Mm-hmm. It's just frustrating.
Yeah, no, and it's just the whole denying Aspinall as being here right now. It's the whole Jones being like, even I don't think Dana's mentioned, but Jones being like, yeah, no, he doesn't deserve it. One of the things he said during the press conferences this week was, I'm big time. Tom is not ready for the big time yet. He's not ready to make that step. He's a world champion, brother. And he defended the belt before
did. Isn't he also averaging, like, the shortest
fight? Yeah, and that's the other thing, too.
Nothing goes to the second round
and
with
that's,
Tom.
Yeah, and
he
that's
knocks
the other
you
thing.
Out.
Aspinall has beaten, I want to say, like, half of the top five in under a round.
Right, like...
Zach, when you... when like, your reaction to Jones saying that Tom's not big time... I'm not so much like, what are you talking about? Like, I laugh at that because it's so stupid and ignorant.
Yeah.
Like, I'm just laughing at it. I'm not so much like, what? I'm like, dog, you're that's malarkey is the politician term that we're going to use for that. It's like, you're lying. You don't want to fight him because you know he's going to spark you unconscious.
Just dismissing him. And he's a world champion currently who defended it. And you can't
dismiss
him because it's like, oh, this guy's not big time. He's not ready for it. He defended the belt against Curtis Blaydes. He defended against the number one contender while John is fighting against the number eight contender, Stipe, who hasn't fought in 4 years, who got knocked out the last time he
fought. Curtis Blaydes, best wrestler in the division outside of John.
And I just think a lot of this behavior is unbecoming of a GOAT. Yeah. Like, the other thing that I thought was extremely rich, and I'm not here to bring up anybody's past because none of us are perfect.
Yeah.
But John Jones,
not the best human,
got in trouble a couple times.
Yeah, a couple times.
Well, we'll just leave it there. I thought it was so funny in the I bring it back to the pre-309 pressers where he's talking about, I also just think he's kind of an a-hole. And I'm like,
he's been so nice
to him too. John Jones calling anybody an a-hole is
he used to talk about other people's tests. He talked about, I think it was Vitor Belfort's test. Yeah. He used to talk about how, what was it? Obviously calling him an a-hole. He used to call Colby Covington a bad person, which I think we all agree. But coming from you, John,
I can name him. I can name him like on my hands. I beat you after a weekend of cocaine.
Yeah, like.
There's basically take a highlight reel of what he said to Daniel Cormier, and that's enough. That's, and then take out anything he said to any other fighter. But it was just like, I don't know, it just felt like petty. And I'm not trying to, like, even though fighting is, again, a very testosterone fueled sport, I'm not even trying to say that UFC fighters have to be manly men the whole time. But when you're in a combat sport, the crowds violently applaud you giving people CTE. I just don't think that, like, saying that you find a guy to be a mean-spirited person and that's why you're not going to fight him is it's not what the GOATs say. I had this conversation with a couple guys you know, with Wesley Grayer and Tyler. And one of the things that I was saying to them is, you know, I'm not going to take away any of Jones's legacy, or I'm calling him the GOAT right now. I believe it. But the one thing, I bring it back to the comparison to other GOATs in other sports, right? It felt like, you know, once you saw Tom Brady get older, right, he was still – there was never a point where he stopped trying for Super Bowls. Yeah. There was – even when he wasn't, like, that good anymore, that man was still trying to go out there and win Super Bowls. Mm-hmm. He won his 7th Super Bowl with the Buccaneers, and one of his teammates went on IG Live, and the rest of the team is celebrating. He's sitting at his locker undressing. He's won a Super Bowl before. He doesn't give a damn. Mm. You look at these other GOATs in sports where Kobe, in his last game, drops over 60.
Yeah.
You see all this kind of stuff, right? I feel like with John Jones, right, you are undefeated. The amount of title defenses, what is it, 16 title defenses?
Yeah.
Just unbelievable career, unbelievable legacy. And I understand that that's something that it's a big risk. Every fight, you risk your undefeated record, and I understand that's a big deal. But it feels like he's protecting his record, not defending his record. And I feel like a GOAT would defend their record. And that's to me what just kind of bothers me about this whole thing.
And this is what took me out the whole week. This was the one thing that John said that really bothered me, that made me realize that it's over. This is what he says. I'm going to relinquish the title and just give it to Tom so I can go fight someone else.
No,
you're
going to
give the title because you don't want to fight him. He just says, like, I don't have it.
I feel like he could be trolling.
He was just he says, I'm going to give up the title and I'm going to go call out. And he calls out Derek Lewis.
That
and
was
Jamal
hilarious.
Hill. Derek Jamal. Lewis and Jamal Hill.
I don't want to see
and
any
Ferrer,
more
he's calling
Jamal
out light
Hill.
Heavyweights. Yeah. He's a heavyweight now and he's calling out light heavyweights. That's what bothers me.
I would love to see John Jones and Derek Lewis, though.
Oh my gosh.
I would love to see the fight, and I would love leading up. I would love leading up to the fight, just all like a compilation video of all their best moments.
Yeah. That's gonna be that was
absolutely Ronda Rousey.
Where Ronda Rousey? No, but that's like, this is the GOAT of the sport saying, you know what? I don't want to defend against you. I'm just gonna give you the belt over. It's the laying down and dying, just being like, yeah. You can have it. This is the guy who looked Daniel Cormier in his eyes and said, I will kill you if you touch me. But Tom Aspinall shows up and, oh, here's the belt, Tom. Leave me alone. Please don't fight me.
A fall from grace. Don't want to go out like a dead fish out of water. John Jones is your heavyweight champion, but at what cost to the legacy of Tom Aspinall and to the heavyweight division in the sport of mixed martial arts, the UFC? We move away from 309. We go over to 310, and it's going to be, excuse me, not 310, in between that, you see that
Fight Night Macau.
Fight Night.
Yo,
Macau.
Mati.
I had to act.
Real quick.
Yeah.
I got class at 4 o'clock.
Oh, my
Thank
God.
Thank you guys for having me
Thank
on.
Thank you, Jack Warner. Hell of an episode for a
Appreciate
debut.
You
the
for
point.
A great debut.
I think I'm going to take that. Happy Gilmore. Jake Paul's Happy Gilmore. That is the perfect. That's actually the act. That's the comparison
yep.
there.
Nope.
No, ladies, I appreciate you boys. Man.
Ladies and gentlemen, Jack Warner, WFUV's very own Jack Warner, New York Rangers beat reporter. If you want to plug in your Twitter, you could go ahead right there.
It's Jack. Oh, my God. I forgot it. Hold on.
He's doing too much. He doesn't have time to look at it, guys.
Oh, boy.
He's a busy man.
Oh, boy. This isn't the first time I've been put on the spot and forgot my Twitter account. It is Jack_Warner23 for
Jack?
All your Rangers coverage. Occasional Knicks coverage, any sort of various sports coverage or just funny tweets about the Red Sox.
The Invisible Man, he's here, but he is nowhere, doing everything all at once.
Let's run this back again. Another good fight, another good card. I'll be back.
Welcome to the breakdown. Jack underscore Warner 23 is now a part of Pound for Pound Confettis and Flowers. Sorry we did not get you a cake, but we will have you on next week, Jack. Enjoy your class, and thank you so much for joining the show.
That's love, boys. Thank you. Yep.
Thank you. As we move onwards, as they say, not 309, but UFC Fight Night, Piotr Jan, Davidson Figueiredo, Figgy and Jan get into it, but we have an excellent co-main event to start off. Yao Xiao Nan and one of Zach's personal favorite fighters, Tabitha Ritchie, are going to do battle. And Zach, I got to tell you, Tabitha Ritchie, I do think at 11-2, the volume that she's able to display in a fight is excellent. Mm-hmm. But if Xiao Nan is able to touch her with that power, I think it may be perfect. Xiao Nan has to be perfect. Let me start this way. Ritchie has to be perfect three rounds.
Over, I believe this is a three-round fight, yes.
Xiao Nan has to be perfect for a second, and to that you say?
It's tough to call.
It's tough to call
because Tabitha Ricci is a fighter who is about volume. She's about being in your face and just putting as many strikes as she can in your face. The problem with Tabitha Ricci has always been the power difference.
Yeah.
She doesn't really have that power to put people out. She has one knockout on her record, and I believe it was a TKO. And besides that, we just have a bunch of decisions where she's just out-voluming people for over three rounds. Out-voluming people for three rounds at a time, and it leads to some close decisions because she's not convincingly winning. She's not putting a ton of damage on people. But at the same time, she's landing. She's being active. She's just getting in your face, and that's the thing that worries me about this fight for her, at least, is Yan Xiaonan has that power, and she's put a lot of people out with it, and she's very good at moving backwards and putting people out with one strike moving backwards. That's exactly what she did to, to Andrade.
Yeah.
Andrade was charging at her, trying to do the old Tabitha Ricci method, getting in her face and trying to disrupt her, trying to just put that pressure on her. And Xiaonan just steps back and just puts her down with a clean hook, I think is what I remember.
And most impressively, I would say, about doing that to Andrade is because Andrade is like a brick wall, Jessica Andrade. Mm-hmm. She's in your face, move forward, and she's muscle.
Yep.
And she has power of her own. Mm-hmm. So the fact that Xiaonan not only has the power, but the wisdom, it's like a controlled chaos. She's able to sit in the fire against a huge power puncher, keep her composure, move on the back foot, and knock her out there. That's really impressive. Mm-hmm. And there's going to be less of that because, again, like you said, Tabitha Ricci is not a power puncher.
Yeah.
There's not that fear, that elevated level of fear that you're going to have to worry about there.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to go Xiao Nan for this
Coming off of that fight against Wei Li. She didn't look bad. She looked competitive with Wei Li, and we know just how dominant Zhang Wei Li is.
The head of the monster right
it's
now.
It's another level of competition, and we're going to find out this weekend that Tabitha Ricci's ready for it. I think from the start, if she wants to win this fight, she's got to get some respect some way. Because I know Xiaonan's going to come in here not respecting that power. Most people don't when they fight Tabitha Ricci. So Tabitha Ricci's going to have to hit her with something to make her respect the power. And I think she wrestles. I think she wrestles a good amount in this fight, actually. I think she looks to get this one to the ground, trying to get some ground and pound in there. Because the best way to mitigate that power is to take it to the ground and Tabitha Ricci, as active as she is, as the volume puncher she is, she's going to look for any way to win this fight, and it may be taking it to the ground. It may be working a lot in the clinch. It may just be being in her face, but at the same time, she's got to make her respect her early on if she wants to be in this fight, because Yan Xiaonan's not going to respect the power out the gate, and she's going to be willing to stand in that pocket. And when she's willing to stand in that pocket, she can land something big, and that's always dangerous. I don't know if I have a pick for this weekend for this fight. To me, it's just two different styles that clash. Let me just go out on a limb, vibes pick, and I'll say Tabitha Ricci. She's going to out-volume her for three rounds.
Out-volume
Xiaonan. I think she could get her in she's shown really good things in the clinch. I think, if anything, if she's going to win this fight, she's going to take Xiaonan to the fence, and she's going to hold a clinch, and she's going to be just put in volume, just be active. trying to keep her against the cage so she can't land big shots, so she can't load up super heavy or take it to the ground. That's her best method of victory. I'm just going to say that she's able to do it this weekend.
I'm not going to be mad at that Tabitha Ricci. Once again, one of Zachariah Cordova's favorite fighters
and
here.
Huge title implications here. Winner of this is going to fight for the belt likely.
Exactly. So if Tabitha Ricci has it within her to dig deep and stay away from the fire that is Zhao Nan, she will be fighting for a title shot. I'm going to go Zhao Nan. I'm going to go opposite of you because otherworldly power, you're just a world breaker at that point. You have to be perfect for a single second, and she has the ability to be wise with it as well. Mm. It's not just uncontrolled chaos. It is controlled, yes.
And when I did meet Tabitha Ricci earlier this year, when I met her earlier this year, I did remember speaking with her a little bit, and I did mention, like, hey, go get that belt.
Maybe
so, hey, if it happens, if she can go fight for the belt, I would like to say that I helped spark that.
Okay. that may be the driving motivation.
Whether she remembers me or not.
Whether she remembers, shout out. She'll probably be in there. Shout out to Zach. Don't know his last name.
I'd love a shout out on the mic, Tabitha.
That would be
could.
Insane. Miss Ritchie, if you win, just remember the name Zachariah Cordova. And I'm going to need his analysis on this next fight. Top of the card, Piotr Jan Davidson.
Banger.
Figgy.
Banger.
Figueredo, indeed, a banger. I don't know which one I'm going with in this one.
Were they champions at the same time? I believe they were.
I believe
this
they
is
were.
A fight that I feel like we had. Yeah, at the same time.
Nice.
This is a fight that we looked at when they were both champions and said we would love this matchup. Figgy obviously being the champion at 125.
Yeah.
And all of his battles against Brandon Moreno, and then Piotr Jan being the champion at bantamweight and the controversial way in which he lost his belt by kneeing Sterling in the head, and then coming back and Sterling backpacking him for four rounds. And Piotr Jan has not looked like Piotr Jan, I feel like, in his recent fights. He's struggled now. And it's not, yeah, and a lot of it is due to the fact that he's fighting the top of the bill fighters. He fought Sean O'Malley. Really close decision with Sean O'Malley. He fights Merab after that. We already know how Merab is. I literally tried to take Piotr Jan down 60 times in that fight and maybe landed like 8 of them.
49 takedown attempts for Merab Dvalishvili in that last fight.
Just weird fight to watch. Just takedown attempts, just holding onto a leg for dear life. But he looked better in his last fight against Song Yadong. Song Yadong is a rising contender in this division. And Piotr Jan took him on, said, hey, I'm going to get myself back in the title picture. Let me beat Song Yadong. Looked good in that fight.
Yes, he did.
And now he has a chance with Davidson Figueiredo, who has looked really good.
Perfect.
At bantamweight so far.
Perfect.
Yeah, he's looked really good. He's beaten Rob Font. He's beaten Garbrandt now. And now he just beat Chito Vera. And actually was, I think, I don't know statistically if it is, but one of the first people to drop Chito Vera.
I do think Chito Vera is a little overrated, Marlon Vera.
He's definitely overrated, but the chin is for real.
The chin is for real
on
Marlon Vera.
I mean, we're talking about the knee that he took from Sean O'Malley that didn't even put him down, and Figueiredo was able to put him down with, I believe, just a right hand.
Yeah.
So that power does carry over to bantamweight. He's a bigger guy now than he was at flyweight, and if you remember at flyweight, he did have that power back then too, so it's carried over well for him. He's looked very good so far in bantamweight. I'm almost surprised that I'm almost surprised that it's taken him this long to get into a title eliminator bout with how he's fought this far. But I think this weekend we're finally going to find out. These are two kind of, I don't want to say older fighters, but definitely a little bit out of their prime in terms of I take that back. Not out of their prime. Figueiredo's looked great recently.
Yes.
Jan's had tough competition. But two guys who have been champions who are trying to get back to the belt. We're finally getting the matchup, I feel like, that we've always kind of thought about in terms of these two guys were champions at the same time. They were both really good in their times. Let's see who can fight for the bantamweight
title. I'm
going to
play devil's advocate just because I think I know where you're going to go with this. I think you're going to pick Figgy. I think you're leaning towards more Figgy. Let me go with Jan. Let me stir
trouble
up.
Yeah.
I mean, Jan is obviously the bigger fighter here, and he's a very, very active striker. I think that's going to give Figgy some trouble. 5.1 to 301 strikes landed per minute here. And he's on the up and up. But once again, it's always left a bad taste in my mouth as to exactly how he lost the belt. But then the second fight against Aljamain, very, very close there. Mm-hmm. And then you fight the cream of the crop. That is O'Malley and Merab. I don't think that's the full story for Piotr Jan. Mm-hmm. So therefore, I do think he does have a second act. I do think that it was maybe a little bit of a hiccup, a hiatus, if you will, there for Piotr Jan. I do like the 3-0 by Figgy there, but Rob Font, one of the better boxers in the UFC, but not the biggest name there. And Cody Garbrandt, no love. We love no love, but old man walking. So it's a bit overrated there. So give me Piotr Jan for this one.
Interesting. I'm going to go with Figueiredo. I think the momentum's there. I think we haven't exactly figured out just how good he is yet at bantamweight, because he's looked really good in his first three fights. Which, by the way, he just beat Cheeto, who fought for the belt.
Yeah.
I think Figgy should have been able to fight for the belt immediately after that. It's a little confusing to me that...
Figgy O'Malley?
Yeah.
Ooh,
Figgy, or even, Figgy Merab.
Figgy Merab.
But we're finally going to get the fight. He's finally getting his title eliminator bout. Winner of this is going to likely fight for the belt next. And give me Figueiredo, man. The momentum's been there. He's looked really good at bantamweight. I see him... I don't think I see a finish. I think we go five rounds in this one. I would love to see a finish, but I think Figueiredo is able to do it.
One looking for a second act. The other one flying colors in the bantamweight division. They will join ahead to fight for UFC gold. And ladies and gentlemen, after a long-awaited time, that's going to do it here for us in the WFUV studios of Fordham University for Pound for Pound. Ladies and gentlemen, once again, it's been a very, very long layoff, but we are happy, so happy to be back talking to you guys about Cage again. The most profound expression of the human spirit is the fight game, and we love to talk about it. Mahdi Dembele, joined here by Zachariah Cordova. Shout out to Jack Warner, Jack underscore Warner 23, as he is now the newest member of Pound for Pound. Trey Rodriguez behind the boards. Pound for Pound is a production of WFUV Sports.